Call the meeting to order. Heather, would you do a roll call, please?
Sheldon Delane, first ward. Lucas Stansberry, second ward.
Present.
Phil Houston, third ward.
Present.
Jeff Leslie, fourth ward.
Present.
Go ahead, Mr. Mayor. So we have a quorum.
Bill, would you do the invocation, please?
Heavenly Father, as we come to you, we come thank you for this opportunity to represent this city, Father. Pray that you might be pleased with everything that's said and done. Father, pray that you be with this country, with its continued healing, Father, from the coronavirus. Just bless in all things. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could I have a motion for acceptance of the agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion for the acceptance of the agenda.
Second.
You have to state who you are.
Bill Houston. I make a motion for the acceptance of the agenda. Jeff Leslie, second.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries. Could I have a motion for acceptance of the consent agenda as printed?
Mr. Mayor, Lucas Stansberry, second ward. I move that we accept the consent agenda A through B as presented.
Jeff Leslie, fourth ward, second.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries. Go on to regular business. First on the agenda is appointments.
Mr. Mayor, I talked to the city administrator, and she thought that the land bank was supposed to have, I'm sorry, this is Karen, city clerk. They thought they were supposed to have appointments for land bank, but she was mistaken, and they're not due yet. And she also thought maybe the city attorney put that, but it's not up until the end of the year. So we have no appointment at this time.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, item B, consider ordinance 2-122, eliminating a confusing redundancy regarding number of cats and dogs per household.
Karen Beck, city clerk. Mr. Mayor, there was some confusion with the ordinance, with the redundancy of it. So the city administrator just wanted to repeal that particular ordinance to not have that confusion.
Bill Houston, third ward. That's which ordinance? We do have an ordinance, right, concerning amount of pets allowed?
Yes, we do.
For a household?
Yes, we do.
And is this an additional one, or?
It's mentioned later in the ordinance, and I think that's where the confusion was coming.
And just for clarification, we're allowed, or the citizens of this town are allowed, what, three dogs? And how many cats?
Three
cats.
Right.
So therein might lie the problem. We don't really have any way to put much teeth into that cat ordinance, do we?
Karen Beck, city clerk. No, not really. I mean, I think if the authorities go into a house for some type of call and they see multiple cats, I think there can be a citation issued at that time.
Code violation. This is
our city attorney. If there was a violation of this ordinance, as I look at it, there was a duplicate, what appears to be a duplicate in old section 2-122 and 2-124. One, however, addressed, the language is almost identical, but one addressed training, buying, selling, and so forth. That would be eliminated, and we would limit it to three dogs and three cats, three dogs or one litter of pups, or three dogs or one and one litter of pups, same with the cats. If there's a violation, it's a code violation. It is a, it's not even a misdemeanor, I don't believe, and so we would just enforce it in court as a code violation, and I assume our judge would try to work with the, well, first your codes officer hopefully would try to work with the individual and say, limit your number of pets because it's a violation of the code. You try that for a while. If that doesn't work, then there's official citation. Then I file something with the court, a criminal complaint for a code violation, much like if you have a building, kind of same thing. And then we can seek specific enforcements or fines or things like that in municipal court. If the judge grants a judgment against them, a fine, he levies a fine against them, they can appeal if they want to, or they have to pay a fine. And they can continue to, the codes officer then can go back and continue to try to enforce and continue to cite.
Well, Billy Houston, Third Ward, I guess my point to this was, is not, I don't have a problem with clarifying the, or cleaning up the ordinance, but the ordinance, the original ordinance doesn't state whether that would be inside cats or outside cats, right?
To the best of my knowledge, Karen Beck, I don't think so.
Jeff Lex, the Fourth Ward, I read it this morning, and it doesn't clarify indoors or outdoors. It also has a stipulation that individuals can seek a kennel license if they want to have more than that, the number the attorney just prescribed. And then additionally, for an individual who's petted, had a litter of kittens or a litter of pups, there's an exemption for 6 months. The language seems reasonable, and to me it is simply, as you described, clearing up a redundancy. So.
Well, and language I'm not concerned with. I guess more to the point, in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. I have a problem with feral cats. I mean, they're the cats. Well, I say feral cats. They seem to stay at one or two residences, but then they seem to be all over my yard.
Yeah,
so
Steve Bangermeyer, city attorney. So one of the things we can do is we can trap, as you well know, and we do that. There is a, quote, trapping program that we utilize. I don't think we euthanize. I think we trap and sterilize, neuter, spay, that kind of thing, and then turn loose with the idea that we try to humanely treat the animals and prevent the continued population of feral cats in the city. So I think that's our program so far. If you think we need to change it, then probably, you can't discharge a firearm within the city limits.
I don't think we need to change. I think sometimes I think there ought to be a little bit better maybe control of cats, or maybe the trapping of cats.
And that's our codes enforcement. So we can, if we want, we can have a discussion with our codes. I don't know that the police officers are enforcing the number of cats and dogs. I think it's more of a codes officer role, as I understand it.
Right. Karen Beck, city clerk. We have captured cats in the past where they've been a nuisance, and they have put, as a city, we have put out cages and traps and caught the cats and treated as needed.
Okay. That's all I have on that issue then.
Mr. Mayor, Lucas Stansbury, Second Ward. Steve, my only question was harbor, is that the word that would, does that mean in or out? It's just if you have cats.
Say that again.
Harbor, is that the language within the ordinance that would?
Well, what they're eliminating is, or engage in the commercial business of breeding, buying, selling, training, or boarding them. That's eliminated. So that there is redundancy in the two sections, and the one allowed you to engage in the commercial business. And so if we eliminated this provision, then no commercial cat and dog providers in the city of Girard.
Without a kennel license,
yes.
Luke Stansbury, Second Ward. But is the harbor, like when you look at harbor in the ordinance, it says no person or household shall own or harbor. Is that where, does that go to bill? Because I see own would be maybe I guess that's my only really question.
Steve Angermeyer, city attorney. My wife is a cat lover, and she sees a stray cat come out to our place. We're out in the country, and it fakes a broken leg and comes up on my porch, and she starts feeding it, and then suddenly it's instantly healed, and guess what? It's our cat now, even though we've never bought it. Nobody ever gave it to us, so we're probably harboring that animal.
Okay.
And then when it gets a name, we probably own it. And so I think harboring is somehow provided, you know, it's a common sense definition. But I think somehow providing shelter, somehow providing food, you know, throwing out some cans of cat food, putting out some dishes, not chasing it off, not calling the codes officer, all those things would probably take, it's a very fact-specific thing, but all those things, it's a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
But all those would be, and I would argue in court, all those would be factors that I would consider for harboring an animal.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
I'll pay my fine now. My wife is got reports. So let me know. I'll bring a check.
This is Mayor Mickey Pyle. I wanted to know one thing on the kennel license. I didn't know how that perceived in Girard. I know in Pittsburgh it has to be agricultural area to get one, but I just wondered what that had pertaining to this ordinance.
Karen Buck, City Clerk. At this time, in as many years as I've worked here, we have never, ever issued a kennel license. I do know there's an ordinance and regulations to it. I do not know what they are off the top of my head.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, Jeff Lusty, 4th Ward. I move we approve the repealing of Ordinance 2-122. I give for the recommendation of the city clerk.
Second.
What's your name?
Bill Houston. Second.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Moving on to item C, coronavirus updates. Swimming pool, city hall, parks, golf course, departmental operations.
Mr. Mayor, Karen Beck, City Clerk. Steve Bruce of Public Works is here. He'll discuss his department. As for my department for the city office, I would like to bring the employees back full time. Our desks are more than 6 feet apart. We will abide by social distancing. There are many times when we all agree need to be there. I would like to keep the office closed until further notice, until we have the safety of our glass up or our barrier up, as well as we haven't received our thermometers yet. And we're not prepared for that part. But I would like to be able to bring the office personnel all back to full-time if possible.
Okay, this is Mayor Pyle. Have you got any indication on when they're going to put the barriers up?
Yes, Karen Beck, City Clerk, I received information from the person who's doing it. They're building it now. It will be put up this week.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, Steve Brooks with the Public Works Department. We have had lots of discussion about the golf course and about the swimming pool. And recently, some local towns around us have opted to close their pools for the season. We have done a lot of discussion about this, and as desperately as I would love to open that pool up, I feel like at this point with the other communities around us closing, we run a huge risk of inviting more opportunity into our community. And additionally, with being limited to a 90-person capacity in those pools, if those people come to our community because they want to swim in a pool, and we see that commuting between pools anyway, what I'm afraid will happen is our residents will get edged out anyhow. It's going to be nearly impossible to be able to commit to a 6-foot social distancing policy with kids in a pool. And as much as I desperately, truly want to open that pool, I think it would be in the best interest of the residents of the town and of the city as well to consider leaving the pool closed for the season of 2020. That's, we've had some discussion at length with our attorney as well. Do you want to interject?
Steve Aguilar, city attorney. On the league's call, this the league of municipalities, their general counsel or their bank of lawyers every Tuesday and Thursday, if you're interested, you can listen to what their updates are. Some of you have done that, and I believe it's at 3 o'clock on Tuesdays, 4 o'clock, 3 or 4 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Anyway, on their call last Thursday, I believe, maybe it was Tuesday, I don't know, last week, they spent the better part of a half an hour to 45 minutes talking about pools and pools opening. And it differs from golf in the sense that you don't have your it's going to be nearly impossible to enforce your 6-foot social distancing that's recommended. Remember, this 2 weeks that we open up is a test period to see if our COVID cases go up or down. And even though we're supposed to go to phase two on the next 18th, it may change. And so there's always the possibility that's going to occur. So just don't keep that in the back of your mind. The other thing is they spent a good deal of it talking about the Kansas Tort Claims Act and how we could be liable for somebody getting infected if we allowed mass groups to gather at a pool where it's nigh impossible to enforce social distancing. I heard some of the theories of recovery, and frankly, it's just not worth the opening of my recommendation to this council and this city is do not open your pool, given this very unique and difficult time we're in. Not doing it to kill anybody's summer or be a killjoy, but given our potential for further pandemic issues, and based on league's recommendation, they just say don't open. It's different from a golf course. We've got some things in place, and I'll let Mr. Brooks talk about that. We've got some things in place that probably help us with distancing, but at a pool, it's going to be very difficult to do that. So my recommendation, based on what the league told us last week, is do not open, given the extreme possible liability we have as a city to have this problem.
Jeff Leslie, Fourth Ward, do we need a motion to that effect, or is at the discretion of the Director of Public Works? Just
I would think we would.
This is Steve Angermeyer again. I think it's probably best if our council vote on this, and somebody have a motion, and then we have a vote. If you want to discuss it further, that's fine, but I just throw that in as a procedural thing. So it's on the record.
Jeff Leslie, Fourth Ward. I appreciate the fact that we have waited as a city until we had to make this decision, and I think we would be, in my opinion, we would be foolhardy to go against the league's recommendation, especially as Mr. Brooks said, if individuals were to drive here from a neighboring county anticipating their children being able to swim and not allowed in, let alone the issue of tort recovery. It seems like a sad reality that that's what we need to do.
Luke Stansbury, Second Ward. Steve, and this is just up for the council, is it possible, because there's two separate pools, correct? There's a large pool and a small kiddie pool?
Steve, both works. There's a baby pool that sits on the north side of the pool, which is literally
Is it possible to do maybe private parties for families only for the small pool if they had younger kids, just so we don't take away a complete, you know, area to go for that type of environment? Like, is the park going to be closed too? I guess that's some of the questions we got to think about. Is
the park currently is closed, and to be honest with you, this kind of mimics some discussion we had with the golf course, which we'll get into here in a bit. But my feeling would be this: if you have private say a birthday party, you still have all these kids coming from different households, and I think if we facilitate that, I think we still have some liability with that. And so I would err on the side of caution and say that probably would be a good idea. The other side of it too that we have to remember, and I kind of tagged this on in our discussion at the last council meeting, was the Red Cross currently has lifeguard training out. You can't do it. And so which our pool manager, who we were ready to employ, is certified to train lifeguards, and he's the one that gave me this instruction. So what you have is whatever lifeguards we would have returning from last year, we would have. But if we didn't have, say 10 of them returning, and we have 10 new ones that he would have to train, so now you're short staffed. On top of that, we can't do lifeguard training. We also really can't do swimming lessons. And in doing swimming lessons, you can't do the 6-foot social distancing because you're going to be you're going to be right there with the child. And so, you know, while the pool water itself is disinfected and it would fight off coronavirus, it's what happens above ground that you can't stop. And there's, you know, if you've been at the pool and seen how the kids engage, I just think it becomes impossible. And it doesn't break anybody's heart any more than mine, I promise you, because I was so proud of that pool last year and how it did and how we were expecting it to do this year. This is not an easy choice for me, I can assure you.
Lucas Sanders, second ward. So, and I'm just, again, bringing this up. So we think it would be probably a loss to try to open up even a little bit for just individual families that don't have friends, or you have like a family of 5, 6 that could come time slots to use the pool at certain times, or that'd be too tough of a, would that be too much of a logistics problem?
Steve Rose from Public Works. I feel like from a liability standpoint, I feel like it would be a problem. Also from the standpoint of the amount of money and energy that it costs to get that pool up and going. Where I was at initially with our administrator when we spoke about this was, I had told her if I can't get this pool up by mid-June at the very latest, then it becomes very cost prohibitive because you've got so much that goes into that. We have to buy chemicals. If you either use them all up or they just go to waste, and we don't buy them in, you know, they're not in bags like we buy for a residential pool. These things are in 300-gallon vats. And plus the amount of water that it takes to fill that pool, the energy that it takes to get it ready. And we're going ahead with the prep of the pool so that the condition of it remains good through the year, and so that next year we're doing some things, seam sealing and things like that, to make sure that we're ready for the next season, and that's about the best that I can do with it. So, yeah, I feel like, honestly, from the standpoint of the money that's going to be involved with it, to get it up for just a few private parties possibly, I don't think it's a good idea. On my side of it, that would be, I would recommend not doing it.
Jeff Leslie, 4th Ward. Was two questions for Steve Angermeyer. Was there guidance from the League of City Municipality regarding parks, and do we need to address these two issues separately?
Parks and pools?
Parks, yes, parks and pools.
Well, pools, they say, you know, parks, you run somewhat of a similar problem. You've seen kids at a pool running around, and we've all had kids, former children. I'm a former child myself, so I swam some. Parks, I haven't talked to Mr. Brooks about it, but I would assume we'd have very similar issues there. You know, with golf, which we're going to talk about in a minute, I think we have a plan. It's just those unrestricted areas where you have children and adults and youth mixing together that again, extraordinary times. We're talking about a once and perhaps two lifetime issues here, frankly. And so, out of abundance of caution, I too am concerned about liability in parks, although it's probably not, your contact is, you know, not crammed, you don't have as many people crammed in such a small space, that's obvious. We could open a park and say you have to stay 6 feet. I don't see how you're going to enforce it.
Jeff Leslie, 4th Ward, we wouldn't have to make the decision on parks for the summer, though. Would we could wait and...
There's no prep, as I understand, parks other than mowing the grass, so we could always... If things change and we get a vaccination or something, sure. I think we can put it on the table. If we want to open a park up later on, I think that's completely understandable. Yeah, I don't think there's much question for that.
Steve Ursoff works record. Mr. Wesley did address that. So with all the equipment down there, primarily most of it is plastic. And from the details that I've been getting on the COVID-19 on plastic surfaces, if that virus makes contact with plastic, it stays for days. It's not just hours anymore. Now we're planning for 3 days. And so from the standpoint of, so we can't barricade, we can put the fence up around it and barricade the park. To, you know, we've got signage up right now so that it shows the city's position on it. For us to openly open the park and say, okay, come play, I think we would almost have to add staff, and we'd have to have somebody there at all times that could run around disinfecting behind all of the kids, and that's going to be a task. Yeah, so, and that's all part of this COVID-19 regulation when you're dealing with how do we control it, how do we contain it. And we talked about some of our golf committee meetings this week. We have been very blessed as a community, and I think it's because we took some good precautions, and I hate to just toss that to the wind while we're reopening. And it's scary. The reopening is scary. I think it is nationwide. That's what we're seeing, is a fear of this. And already on this morning, morning, I heard a release that Delaware County picked up 16 more deaths and since this reopening. And so it's kind of spooky, you know, when you get into all of this. So, my recommendation would be to leave the parks the way they are, but maybe possibly put in there, you know, until further notice or pending or something of that nature, not necessarily squashing it all the way out. There's not the cost of it taking that pool up and going. The park's already there. It's in business. The pool is a different story because you have to put a lot of money and a lot of time in that pool to get that thing ready to go, and you have to get that water acclimatized, or other those kids are going to be swimming in Arctic waters all summer long. And they won't, that won't go well either. So.
Okay. Second.
Jeff Leslie,
fourth ward.
Lucas
Stansberry, I think it's apparent that you've thought about this a lot, Chris Brooks, and our council's done some research and listened to some recommendations. So unless there's any other debate, I would like to move on separate issues. Number one, that we close the pool for the season of 2020. Regrettably, close the pool for the season of 2020.
Lucas Stansberry, second ward, second.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Jeff Leslie, fourth ward. Mr. Mayor, I move that we maintain the current closure of the city parks with the hope that we may be able to revisit the subject based upon public health recommendations at a later date. So.
Lucas Stansberry, second ward. Second.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, Steve Bruce, Public Works Director, for the issue of the golf course. So what we have done, pending our last meeting, we decided to go ahead and open for the weekend for free play. We saw some play on Saturday. I'm not sure about on Sunday, but on Saturday, later in the day, it got pretty busy. That was good to see. We decided we would open the clubhouse today. We did that this morning. We constructed a shield, a glass shield, and put up on the counter out there, and we stipulated regulation that only one person would be allowed in the clubhouse, one customer at a time, pay their fees, dues, and cardinals and whatnot. And once that person left, then the next person could come in and engage. We also decided that we would make it mandatory that it would be touchless golf, and we put up regulations out there, some regulations, the basics, what touchless golf means. And so it's clearly defined to the people that come out there. And I think so far, from what I've heard from the staff that's been there, went pretty smooth this morning. And of course, it's the weather right now is not very conducive to playing golf. But we met with the golf committee. We had some deep part of discussion again there, just like we've had with the pool here. I didn't want to be the only duck in the pond, so I called around to all the other courses around us that I could think of and polled it to see what everyone else was doing. And the general consensus seems to be that they are suspending tournament play for the entire year and that they are suspending league play for the year. We talked with the golf committee about it to get their feelings about it. There were some mixed emotions, obviously, like I expected that there might be. I had pitched to them also that maybe we should consider doing the league play as a, like we're doing the parks, as a, you know, let's see how things progress. Some discussion was had about that. Two of the committee members both felt strongly that we should err on the side of caution. If we're going to take tournament play out, that we should also take league play out because you're dealing with large volumes. They're pretty good sized men's league that plays there. And in order to make that happen, you would almost have to split off into multiple nights. They already run one that was an overflow night. So they were talking about, you know, I proposed to them, why don't you make three nights and split it off? But there was some discussion about that, and there was some concern with that, with how that would work. So the decision was made on the floor, and they asked it to be specifically clearly stated that the golf committee made the decision and made the motion that they suspend tournament play and league play for the year of 2020. The golf course would be open for open golf, and that's how they wanted to move forward with it. So, pending your your decision on if that's the way we scripted it.
Lucas Stansbury, second ward. Would this, how would we go, I guess, when would the process be where, because I know we have a lot of events that happen out there. Would this be something, any event that's usually in 2020, we'd also just have to push back, depending on what happened? Or would that be Tesla's golf also? Like, if you had a fundraiser, not fundraiser, but, you know, there's usually, like, Gerard Medical Center has one, I think the Chamber has one.
Seaworks Fund Works, that would be considered tournament play. And so we look at it, there were about seven tournaments that I could find that looked like they were going to happen this year. There was the Gerard Medical Centers, there was Heartland, I believe, has one. Ball and Trojans, there's Christino. Yeah, Christino, yeah. There's about seven of them. Little Church has one. So we opted it. The thing is, it's hard to control that environment, and so that's why we, and literally all the other courses strictly mandated no tournament play whatsoever. The league play was the thing that was in question. There's only one course around us that was doing league and tournament play, and they're not going to stray away from it. They made it clear that they're going to pursue that. So, but one out of six that I contacted, or five that I contacted, so I feel pretty comfortable in the decision we made. Put it through the golf committee. If they would have barked at it, I probably would have said I'm, you know, taking only my own into consideration. But they came right along into it pretty quickly. So I feel like they their opinion was the same. So that's where they were at with it when we left it.
Mr. Mayor, if there's no further discussion on the topic, I move that we suspend golf league play and tournament play with the, as a recommendation from the golf committee for the year 2020.
Jeff West, the fourth ward, second.
Lucas Stansbury.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Jeff Leslie, fourth ward. Mr. Mayor, then we don't need any follow-up then to Karen's recommendations for her department, just to allow her to continue to operate following the COVID-19 requirements. Is that correct? And then your thermometers, is there an estimation on when they may be a delivery date, or are they back ordered?
Karen, that's city clerk. Terry checks on them every day. He says it keeps getting closer. But the transit's been quite timely. Supposed to be this week. I don't know. So that's all I know on it. It's just we don't get an actual date that they arrive. It's just initially it gave a date, and then it just keeps getting so long. But it's supposed to be in shipment.
Understood. Jeff Leslie, 4-4. But you have just an update for everyone that might be watching. You have personnel in office daily, and the drive-through window is open, and so you can meet customers' needs in that format.
Yes.
As of daily now.
Yes. Karen Beck, City Clerk again. As of right now, we are staggering our personnel. I'm usually in the office every day. My office is away from the public, and then so we've had one personnel staff working per day every other day. And right now we're making our deposits on an every other day process. I'd like to go back to every day if possible. But the drive-up is open for business, and we do all of our business through the drive-up. Even if it's new utilities and there's signatures, we do it all through the drive-up window. And we are all taking precautions when we deal with the public.
Mr. Mayor, second ward. I had Karen's. I wrote down Karen's earlier. The request. I was just curious. Public Works. Can you kind of update us or address us what your department's doing or?
With regard to COVID.
Yeah, like I know that. I'm trying to remember last time. I thought last time we discussed about when we had the equipment available, we could have everyone do the county's Crawford County's recommendations. At that time, like pre-screening before you come back into the department or into the building.
Yeah,
And that was my one concern. I want to stay consistent with Crawford County's recommendations. I think they're still the same as far as I'm aware. So that'd be my only issue, Jeff, is if we don't stick to that once we've kind of committed to it.
Karen, back to the clerk again. So are you asking when our employees and our other departments are coming into the city building, is that what you're asking?
Luke Sanders, second ward. More on the lines of keep it consistent, because I know we talked about bringing some individuals back to work in certain areas, like one in the piece of equipment, one on the ground where they're not within each, you know, they're not all in the cab. And to me, that's a little bit easier to social distance in the office where you have a lot of people moving around. So that's my only question. I think it's a little easier for public works and electric guys to social distance because they're physically have some maybe barriers between them or whatnot. And
Steve Brooks, public works director. So what we're doing is we're trying to stick with the 6 foot distancing. We are trying to work. Everybody's back to work. Okay. I can't afford to have everybody on. It's just we get too far behind. And so what we've done is we've split the jobs up, and we're trying to keep guys working apart best we can. We're trying not to ride in trucks where we don't have to. And we still encourage hand sanitizer. We haven't went to the point of taking temperatures or anything like that. If we did that, we'd have to have it literally one of four buildings at any given time because we move so much between. But basically what I ask my guys to do is respect the fact that we need to try to keep distance between us while we work together and try to stay separate, you know, as we do these things. And so by doing that, we're trying to – I've got – like today I had two guys out at the water plant doing some backwashing of filters, and they're out there. I've got two guys working over here doing ditches. I've got two guys running jet. So, you know, we're trying to do that best we can, for sure.
Jeff Leslie, fourth quarter. My only question was, did we need a separate motion with Karen if we needed to?
Karen, I think since you did it for all other departments, I think you should do it for mine as well.
Steve Angermeyer, city attorney, to address Mr. Stansbury's comments, if you look at the county order, it's recommended that employers screen staff for fevers with probably electronic equipment and a questionnaire. It's recommended 6 feet, masks at all times, stagger work shifts, work from home as much as possible, hand sanitizer, one-way flow of movement, those kinds of things. So plexiglass or glass barriers, enhanced cleaning throughout the workspace. Those are the things that, frankly, probably echoes the state guidelines, but they just spelled that a little more specifically. So we do not yet have the infrared thermometers, as I understand it.
Correct.
We do not have the glass up yet to allow the public in the building yet. So we probably are looking at not allowing the public in until, because we have people on our staff that are potentially more susceptible from compromised immune systems, so we want to protect that. As far as questionnaires, that hasn't been done either. So I think what our staff is asking is, should we go ahead and move forward, council, prior to having those things in place when the county is recommending those things? That's my understanding, as I sort of sum it up, if you will. And I guess I'm speaking specifically about the staff here at City Hall is what I'm talking about. So let's be clear to the people that are listening.
Bill Houston, Third Ward. So having the staff come back in, is that contingent on getting the thermometers, and or when were you planning on doing that?
Karen Beck, City Clerk. We all have masks, and we're willing to wear them all day if needed. We have had instances that we have had to have more than one in the office. We have kept our social distancing. We have not filled out a questionnaire as of yet. We do have them. We also have that doesn't deal with us, but the public. The only thing we don't have is the thermometer. Terry, do you know if we have something at the fire department that can take its place for right now?
No, we do not.
Do not, okay. So we do not have anything to check our temperatures. We have hand sanitizer.
Bill Houston, Third Ward. My wife and I have one at home a thermometer that you swipe across the forehead and you stop on the temple. Works excellent. We've been using it for a month. We usually check our temperature twice a day. But I don't know if you're familiar. They use it with kids a lot. Because like I say, you start at the center of your forehead, you move across to your temple and hold it there, no, probably 15 seconds. And it gives you a readout of what your temperature is. So, and I, these ones that are coming are infrared.
They just point
it,
you don't touch.
Well, and I understand what you're saying about not sharing that one, but I don't think they were terribly expensive to the point where you can have, you know,
one
for each employee. But obviously, if you've got these others coming, you know, that's.
City clerk, Karen Beck, city clerk. I'll check with Mathis and see if they have anything available. And if you would like, we'll stay as we're doing right now until we have a thermometer.
Steve Aramore, city attorney. Let me make a suggestion. Why don't we do this? We'll just throw this out. We'll continue as we are, and then we're going to have all the protocols and all the equipment in place. Then we move to potentially having more than one person here at City Hall. And that way we have at least protected our employees, which we want to do.
Correct.
And then once we have these protocols in place, somebody, when they file this motion or prepare to move, say when we have those protocols in place, then we can go back to kind of moving towards our regular operations as much as that can be in this unique time.
Jeff Leslie, 4th Ward, I agree with that recommendation totally. Especially that was part of the question. You're serving the public's needs with the drive-through window, and I am not belittling the necessity for your workload and things stacking up on your desk. I understand and sympathize with that, but I still feel the well-being of your staff overrides the fact that there may be a 24-hour delay in deposits and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that we should have all those safety measures in place. It is my respectful opinion.
Lucas Stansbury, 2nd Ward, to echo that too, Karen. If you guys can, all the departments, if there are some things that are, if there are some issues that we get behind on or processes, maybe we can work something out during the next couple months to try to catch some of those up with needed. Because I know with the pools closed, we have some extra hands that might want to work or do something that might help with some other stuff. Or, I mean, people that one time that were part-time for a reason, they could maybe come and help with paperwork that might be stacks of something.
Steve Brooks, Public Works Director. So you're actually reading my brain, because that's one of the things that I actually want to talk with our administrator about. I've already sort of mentioned it to her to kind of drop the bug in her ear a little bit. But there will be, by not opening the pool, there will be some substantial savings there. However, with the golf course, we also take some substantial losses, and with us going ahead and continuing to leave it open, it may be a wash. But we talked about a few things. We talked about doing maybe some upgrades and that type of thing. But certainly, if we sat down, reviewed it, and brought it back to you guys, and you were willing to listen to that and entertain that notion, it certainly would not hurt my feelings if we were able to add a few extra part-time staff that maybe. And there's a lot of people, especially a lot of these high school kids that lifeguard that really look forward to that summer job. Mm-hmm. And I know this is going to disappoint them with this pool. So I would definitely be open to that. And it's something I'll visit with her about. We'll bring it back to you and let you all make a decision on that. I wanted to mention to you also, I forgot to mention earlier, but on the golf course, we also did put we call it the COVID-19 sign-up sheet. As a separate sheet out there, which I want to mention that because I think it's important for the public to understand what that is. I know my wife works at the courthouse, and they have one there too, and sometimes people, she said, don't understand why you want their name and phone number. We have instructed for the public that's listening, we've instructed that list be kept behind the counter, and they're to ask the information, and since it's a one-on-one exchange, there wouldn't be anybody overhearing it, because some people, and myself included, and that might not necessarily want their phone number out there for everybody to see. So, but it is in place, and it's in play, and it's a separate list aside from what the golfers normally would sign. That way, if CDC or somebody, KDHE or Crawford County came in and wanted the list, it doesn't compromise our other things. So with that, that is in plan. I meant to mention that earlier.
Lucas Stansbury, second ward. Is that okay, Karen? Or what Steve said, you guys can talk about the process if you need more help or something that we can work with.
Yeah, City, Karen Buck, Greenberg. Yes, but until we can have full staff, that won't do us any good.
Okay.
Steve Aramer, City Attorney. So maybe the council ought to suggest somebody move to allow our continued operations to be in place, and once we have all the protections in place, and then we can move towards reopening and doing things. And I think we continue to visit this because, frankly, this is going to be day to day, week to week, as we learned early in this strange and unique time. So.
Mr. Mayor, Jeff Luffy, 4th Ward, I move we continue operations in the City Hall, the Karen Black's department, as is, until all precautions requested by public health officials are in place. And we revisit it no later than the next city council, regular scheduled city council meeting.
Second. Bill Houston, second.
Lucas Stansbury.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, moving on to item D, codes updates. I wanted to make one suggestion on that. I don't believe there's a lot of stuff that we can't do right now for the fact that until we get our public forum opened, we can't address condemnations of houses because people have to have access to come in. I would say some of the stuff we can probably still go, you know, like grass and stuff like that, send out the letters, but a lot of the code stuff right now wouldn't even be appropriate to talk about until we get to the point where we can start going through the process. Do you have me?
Terry Ray, code enforcement. I do have letters ready to go. All I will have to do on those letters is update the date that I send them out, and then we'll just have to go with the timelines that we usually need to do for condemnation. All the grass letters are still being sent out normal because they don't have to come in front of the council if they want to.
Lucas Stansbury, second ward. And Steve, I know courts are still closed. Is that correct? They're closed for a certain...
Mr. Mayor, City Attorney, we are opening this month.
So
we are going to have court this month. I believe it is. Stand by. Look at my calendar here real quick. The 20th of May, we'll have court.
Okay. So if there is tall grass, or can kind of explain, Terry, so that'd be the same process as it is now. You'd get a letter, have a chance to cut it, and then if not, city would mow it, and then...
On the tall grass letters, when we send out the letters, we send them out certified. So when we get back the green slip, if they don't have it mowed within 10 days of me receiving back the green receipt, I can go ahead and put a work order out, and then we will just abate that back to their taxes.
Okay. So that process will remain the same?
Yes.
As it has been.
Karen Beck, City Clerk. Ms. Brinson came in and left her some information in the Dropbox that she gave Terry, the code enforcement officer, and she made a comment while she was here that she kind of wanted to talk to the council regarding what to do with this trailer. I believe Mr. Ray is sending her a letter to his recommendations regarding the ordinance. So she made a comment to me prior to leaving that she already had the trailer on its way, and she needed to know what she needed to do with it. So I don't know if you want Mr. Ray to go ahead and handle this, or if you want to have any comments on it this evening.
Terry Ray, Code Enforcement. I have not heard anything in that manner about the trailer is on its way. She just sent this letter, and
trailer on its way. This is the first time I've heard of it.
Mayor Pyle, I've seen pictures of the proposed double wide, and by the appearance of it right now, it does not meet our standards on what we need or our codes on putting it in as far as the overhangs on it, and I believe the roof pitch probably isn't proper either.
No, in the letter she states that once they add on the front porch and rear porch, the roof pitch will change and it will have to. But as of right now, the trailer coming to town, we don't know how long it's going to sit there until the work is done.
And also, I've noticed on the pictures that she sent, she shows a picture. I don't know if this is supposed to be the finished product. But as you can see, if you look at the picture, it's got a Morton Building emblem on the end. So,
Terry Ray Code Force, I just do believe those are references to the port.
Okay.
Not really 100% sure from the letter. And her explained, she just said she was going to send pictures of what the porch was and wrap around. And the picture that is shown of the trailer, it looks like it's the rear of the trailer. And those are look like sliding glass windows. They're not even a residential window. They probably are, but not to what we have in town on most of our residential homes. You just don't see those. Pretty much a drive-through window, looks like.
So, Steve Angermeyer, City Attorney, Mr. Ray, bottom line is she will not be allowed to set this trailer until, whether it's on its way or not, she can't set it if, for some reason, it doesn't meet all of our code. Is that correct?
If the council or she does probably go to P&Z, the Planning and Zoning Commission, they will have to make the, advisement, let you, the council, know, and then you would be the final decision on it. But then if she does put the trailer there, I guess it would just be down to she would have to get it done in a correct amount of time, not making it a lengthy project in 3, 4, 5 years. It has to be done soon.
Lucas Stansbury, second ward. Terry, I know that when you build homes, you do periodic inspections, correct?
Yes.
So, and this is my ignorance, when you move in homes, is there a different set of...
When you move in a home, all the wiring and everything's there. In a stick-built home, you do all the inspections from the footer to the rebar, and then they put the concrete in, rough framing, rough wiring, before they close all the walls up with sheetrock and insulation. This here, it's already there. I don't know what is in those walls. All I can tell is maybe what's left in the attic, and then from the breaker boxes.
Steve Angermeyer, City Attorney. Terry, I think what they're asking is, what, if any, inspections would you provide if we woke up tomorrow and there's two semi-trailers sitting ahead on the highway with these mobile homes on them, I think is what Mr. Sanders
is
saying.
Yes,
the inspection, if they put the trailer there on the lot, the inspections will be for the electric service going in, the sewer, water inspections for all their connections with city utilities, to have block foundation. Those would be just the only inspections that I'd really have to do because I can't tell them to open up a wall and check the wiring.
I think also, though, if they were, I think to get to the gist of it, if we look at these pictures and we can tell right now the roof pitch is not going to meet our code, windows may not meet our code, would you point that out to the potential homeowner and say you can't set the trailer, or what would that look like?
Coated windows are 5.4 square cubic feet, and I do not know, just in the pictures, looking at the pictures, if those are the right size. And if the way she was talking, an elderly woman was going to move in there, those would have to have steps because you can't be over a certain height until you have an assistant step to get out of the window. And from what I'm seeing, I don't see an exit for an egress. You have to have two doors, one for egress, front or back side of the home. So, and I don't see another door. Possibly there's more pictures, but that's what I ended up with, is it just that one.
Lucas Stansberry, second ward. So, and again, this is just more procedural, so we'll know what to expect as a council. They would come in, you would have some inspections that would be done, what you could do, but then they're expected to either talk with zoning, or what we call it?
Plan
zoning, to get those done in a timely manner, or they have to remove the structure. Is that correct?
Planning zoning is just pretty much going to allow them to put it on that lot, but we do, you can put a manufactured home with all those specifications, 6-inch overhang, right pitch roof, the right size, but this one does not have any of them. They're just wanting to move it to town now. Mostly manufactured homes already have those specs before they're even moved in the city limits.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor Pyle, I got to looking at the letter now, and the width of this mobile home in our ordinance, isn't the width of these double-wide mobile homes minimum of 26 feet?
I am not 100% sure with looking at it. I've got a lot of stuff in my head, and I can't remember all the numbers. I'd have to look at it.
Well, I believe the code or the ordinance does show 26 feet minimum. This one shows 24 by 60.
Okay.
But that's something we probably need to check.
I will check into that.
Karen Buck, City Clerk. Terry, I told Pam that you would be in contact with her.
When I got back from the call I was on, she already called me at the fire department.
If we have no further on codes updates, we'll move on to item E, discuss children at play signs, highway speeds, and potential engine exhaust brake ordinance.
We're dancing. Steve Brooks, Public Works Director. So we had a meeting with Kansas Department of Transportation this week. We had some other business we needed to go over with them. In the course of that, the discussion got brought up in terms of these signs. So, in terms of the engine brake request, with regard to what Kansas Department of Transportation told us, that is a safety feature on the trucks, and to limit or take away the use of that in town, if they were involved in an accident, it might not look good for the city. So their advisement was to stay clear of that. There are towns that do it. They indicated that. There are towns that have done it and that do it to this day. But their advice was, you know, if it were them, they'd stay clear of that. The other thing with regards to the children at play signage, their concern with that is, and also was a concern of our police chief. We had some discussion at length, Johanna and I did as well, with our police chief. The concern is right now what the universal traffic codes are trying to do with signage is they're trying to thin it out and make the signage more recognizable and get out some of the extra signage, because what they end up seeing is that people become blind to the signage. So there gets to be so many signs along the side of the road that they just stop paying attention to that. And again, that was their advisement, was that we not muddy up the waters with with a bunch of additional signage. We have speed limit signage that should be adhered to, and we enforce that, and that we should utilize that. So that was the advisement we got from the police chief. It was also the advisement we received from KDOT. And Johanna and I are both in agreement on that as well.
Jeff Lester, 4th Ward. What about speed limit signs then on the side streets? Because I don't believe there are any on West Willow, for example. There are no speed limit signs there. And then second question, are the neighbors, as was described at a prior council meeting, allowed to put up children at play signs of their own?
Steve Richwood Works. So I'm not going to be able to give you the specific legality of it as far as what Jeff would know. My theory would be this. It's a theory. But
I ride a motorcycle, and there are a lot of my cycle rider friends that put signage up along their ditch line that says, watch out for riders. And I don't know why somebody couldn't do that for their kid that's down low, it's on their lawn, and it, you know, maybe it's a good reminder. I think with regard to speed limit signs, I think it's my understanding of it, been driving now, I'm not going to give my age, but I've been driving for a while. And, you know, there's an understood speed zone, speed limit for residential areas, unless otherwise posted, is typically how it's worded in the manuals. And so I feel like that's probably why we do what we do. And I don't know that we need to vary from that. I know Councilman DeLange expressed concern and desire about possibly trying to lower speed limits. And I would say that from the discussion we had with Kansas Department of Transportation, they did a traffic study in 07. That was the last time they had done one. And well, we should just say we should be careful for what we wish for, because sometimes they may want to take it the other way. And that discussion was actually had in the 07 traffic study on the speed limit going out of town, that maybe we ought to increase that. And so I think what it comes down to, I think, is, you know, our law enforcement doing their jobs, and I feel like they do, and kind of leaving things where they are, I guess, is the general consensus.
Jeff Lefty, Fourth Ward, I understand. I've read and respect the KDOT recommendations and agree wholeheartedly with that. I also understand the presumed speed limit of 30 miles per hour in residential areas, unless otherwise posted. I think it is kind of an accidental, unintended byproduct of the new paving of the streets in town. The folks are driving faster down our streets. And so long as it's not, understanding the recommendations and the fact that we need to comply with KDOT regulations, they don't come up with ideas just out of the blue. So long as we're allowed, I think the fact that we could have permission to put up children at play signs at our own expense and for the value that they are, and then request, if we have a consistent speeding problem, request law enforcement to patrol our neighborhoods would be our reasonable course of action at this time. Does that make sense to you?
I would agree with that.
Lucas Stansbury, Second Ward. Now onto the engine brakes. I see sometimes you see muffled. I don't know, is that something that trucks can do to allow, I mean, to make it quieter, or is that something that...
Steve Brooks, Public Works. So I'm not real up on the whole engine brake theory, you know, as far as the straight pipes. I know a lot of people run straight pipes. I don't know if it's a compression thing when you muffle them, I'm not sure. But in terms of saying, you know, muffled only, I suppose... But I think there again, I'm speculating, but I think any time you place yourself in a position where you are limiting usage, so that means if you have a truck driver that comes through here with straight pipes and you say you can only use muffled, you've just told him he can no longer use that brake. And that brake is actually a factory part of trucks now. And so once you say that, if he doesn't use it for fear of violating the law and being ticketed for that, and... Worst case scenario, you know, if something happens, he can't get his truck slowed down quick enough that he could have, you know, well, then I think that's where we run into issues. And so, again, I think my advisement would be to stay clear of it. That would be my advisement.
Steve Angermeyer, City Attorney. So, just so we're clear for those of us that don't turn wrenches on the City Council, it's called a jake brake. And so, what it uses is the exhaust gas from the engine to slow the RPMs, because these trucks are large and they carry 80,000 pounds sometimes. And so the good old brakes on the wheels, not going to stop it. They downshift and use their jake brakes. That actually what slows the load. What we typically consider a brake, that is used secondarily to slow a semi down. If you drive, my brother drives a truck, he's a professional driver. So he's using his jake brakes and his gears to slow his truck or speed up, as the case may be. He hits the brakes if he's backing it up into a tight space and he needs to stop quick. But to stop it quickly, you're going to hear them downshift and use their jake brakes more so than they will use what we traditionally consider the brake, because they'll wear out their pads so quickly because the loads are so heavy. So that's the reason for what we're talking about here.
Okay.
Again, too, I believe that depending on how you call them. Some people call them engine brakes, some people call them jake brakes, but I think the purpose of them to begin with was mountainous driving where you have steep inclines and steep declines, and it was to keep you from glazing your brakes. And so you know, do we have that in this area? No. But I think when you have somebody that drives over the road, they get used to using the equipment that's there, just like we get used to using the safety equipment and the equipment that we operate on a daily basis. You know it's there. You know how to use it. It becomes a natural muscle memory reaction. And so, I think if we try to chase this avenue, what I feel like could happen is we could open ourselves up to litigation possibly or other things. So.
Okay. Yeah, Luke Stansbury, second ward. Thanks for that, Steve. My personal opinion is, and also from talking with some of the citizens of my ward, it is an annoyance because it is loud and it's just disruptive. But I can also see, especially coming on 47, you go from 65 to 40 in like, seems like seconds. Like I sometimes like, whoa, you know, town's here. So I see why Sheldon is concerned. But maybe that would be more of this. Both these issues, also with the speed limit, would be more of, like you said, you become blinders because you're so used to seeing these signs. But I don't know about you, but whenever I see that flashing sign that says your speed is this, that always comes out like around the hall, the memorial there, whatever, I feel like that'd be a good investment for some of these locations for the city. If we can borrow it from the county, if we can rent it from the county, but just put it right as you come into town so it shows 40 and it flashes when you're going 65 or, you know, same way. And then maybe we can do some sort of billboard for just a little bit for a message that says, you know, people live here, please be aware of your brakes or something like that, since we have seen increased traffic from truckers. I think Bill brought up last time, most times they're using it outside of town. I think they're trying to slow their vehicle. It's just because you have to use it to slow down. So it's just a byproduct of trying to use it to get slower with such a short amount of time. So,
Steve Brooks, Public Works. So I live on this end of town. For those of you who can't see, I'm over here. But anyhow, I'm in Sheldon's area. And so I had one just the other day that came rattling in. He had some good pipes. And you could hear it. I ride a Harley. I have pipes too. So it doesn't offend me. But I know, I understand the offensiveness. I live by a train track, and that train comes through with no mercy. And so, believe me, I understand the offensiveness of loud noises. I like the idea. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I could check into it on possibly some speed warning type of thing, you know, where we have a flashing sign that says, hey, you're doing this, and maybe put that out there for a while to make people a little more conscious about it. I think if it was a temporary deal and we used it just as a way to kind of get people's mind geared towards, hey, this is a residential area, you really need to watch your speed. But I think you'll have some people that they'll pay no mind to that, and you'll have some people that follow to the letter of the law, and you'll have some people that think five over is okay. I mean, I think it's a driving thing, and I think it really comes down to, you know, each person, how they treat their vehicle, how they drive.
Steve Anamar, City Attorney. Another thing that we really haven't discussed is we have laws and we have speed limits in this town. We can just really step up our enforcement. If we see an area that is somebody's abusing, if we've got truckers running up and down this highway, and for example, and they're going through town too fast, we can step up our enforcement. That would not be an issue, and I know our police chief would be willing to do that as well.
Jeff Lester, fourth ward. That was my suggestion earlier. If we have some issues like that considered an enforcement issue. I think part of a good point you made earlier, if that's a standard equipment, I've driven a big truck and 20 ton of rock on, you can't stop it with the manual brakes. And completely understand and that they need those, and not belittling. We here at our house is two blocks off 7 and 47. One of the additional comments that they made in your KDOT conversation was that the road construction is causing redirecting of an increased traffic load on 7. Now, did they mention any time when they thought that might be redirected back to its original flow? Or when they say sometime in the future is what I read.
Steve Bruce probably works. So. That was the time.
Sorry for bringing up that point.
We thought maybe it had to do with the bypass of Pittsburgh. And when I asked one of the upper level KDOT officials, he flat told me, no, it's not really that. So I'm not really sure what the whole thing is with it. We had some discussion prior to our project starting up here. I received a call from one of the KDOT, local KDOT officials, and they were asking me if we had the ability to facilitate those trucks across that are carrying these windmill blades and the silos and whatnot. And I told them that they do it every day. You know, they pull up to the tracks. There's two lanes up there that they can choose from, and they raise their trailer, they go over it, they drop their trailer, and they go on. He asked me, is it inconvenient? Well, sure, it's inconvenient, but it's the nature of what those people do. And those windmills are being, from my understanding of from the discussion we had with them, the windmills are being trained, shipped into Parsons, and then trailered out of Parsons. And so they're trying to get to the north, and they're looking for the best route they can. And in most cases, from the discussion we had with them, if we really understood the routing that they have to take because of lane restrictions, a lot of times they go way out of their way to get where they're trying to go. So they're trying to use lanes that they can. Now, they said with our project going on up here and the lane restrictions that are now up here being imposed, that they were going to have to do something different. And I have seen a reduction in the windmill blades that have been coming through Girard. A lot of the truck traffic that we see, though, however, really isn't pertinent to that so much. It's the 7 highway traffic, and it is their trying. My opinion, again, strictly for what it is, it's an opinion, but I believe they're trying to miss 69 highway, which is a little more heavily patrolled, and they're running 7. And I have followed trucks through town where they were going excessively fast, and they, you know, I think again they get blinded. It doesn't even need mentioning out on 126 and 7. You know, I think they get locked in and they just drive, and it's a stretch of highway that there's just not a lot of action on. So I think that's why we see the increased traffic. And I feel like even the condition of our 7 highway here in town, from no longer than it's been redone, it's deplorable, really. I mean, and it's all truck traffic that's causing it. It really is. So well, that answers your question, but then hopefully it does.
Jeff, plus the 4-4, it doesn't seem like there's a lot we can do about it.
No. There's not.
Other than enforcement issue,
that really is.
Lucas Stansbury, 2nd Ward. I came back from Fort Scott today, and there was a dump truck in the ditch on 7 North. I mean, I've seen a large increase of just trucks going off the road, so I know that there is a concern, and I was behind one I was driving, and it was hit the gravel a couple of times. I was concerned it was going to flip, so I know it's a concern, but like Mr. West, sorry, Jeff, you know, there is nothing we can do about it, but it would be nice to at least, like just stay on top of it like we're doing.
Sure.
I think we're concerned.
Jeff West, the 4th Ward, point of order, then. Do we need a motion, or just can he request the speed, watch your speed signs, your current speed is signs, without any kind of action by the city council?
Steve Engler, city attorney, you can do a motion if you want to, but I think it's probably within his discretion to do that. And I think if he feels like we need to, and our chief of police and our city staff believe we need to have it done, then I think we can go ahead and do it.
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay, nothing further on that. We'll go on to item F. Consider signing a thank you letter to Ken Anderson for his great work striping the square.
Karen Dyke, City Clerk. Mr. Mayor, there's a letter already composed by the city administrator. It's in your paperwork to sign. If you agree to do so, if there's a place for all the announcements to sign, I have the check ready to be mailed. I can install that either with the check, or I can do it separately, whatever you prefer.
Just with the 4th Ward, I move we sign the letter and include it with the check because nothing gets your attention off this page. He did a terrific job on the streets. I think it looks nice. Very good.
Luke Stansbury, 2nd Ward, 2nd.
Okay. Luke Stansbury.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item G, approved city cereal malt beverage license.
Karen Dutch, City Clerk. Mr. Mayor, this has been inspected by the Chief of Police. It's been approved. Everything's ready to go forward with it as long as you approve.
Mr. Mayor, Jeff Lester, 4th Ward. I move we approve the city's serving all beverage license.
Bill Houston, 3rd Ward, 2nd.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item 8. Executive session for real estate to discuss infrastructure improvements for Highland Project.
Mr. Mayor, Jeff Lester, 4th Ward, I recommend executive session for 15 minutes to discuss real estate improvement for infrastructure for Highland Project to include council, mayor, city attorney, city administrator, and public works director.
Karen Beck, City Clerk, is it possible for me to substitute
for
the city administrator?
Yes, Jeff Lester, 4th Ward, accepts the friendly amendment to include city clerk in lieu of the city manager. City administrator.
Second. Bill Houston, 2nd.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
We get back.
bring the meeting back to order. Okay, at this time we have no further business. I'll go to governing body comments. Lucas Stansberry.
Mr. Mayor, Lucas Stansberry, I have no comments tonight.
Bill Houston.
Bill Houston, no comments.
Jeff Leslie.
Jeff Leslie, no comments, sir.
Okay. And Mayor Piles, same.
I make a motion we adjourn. Bill Houston.
Lucas Stansberry, second ward, second.
Lucas Stansberry.
Aye.
Bill Houston.
Aye.
Jeff Leslie.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Here's what I'm going to do.